This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Cray cozies up to ISVs.
And a new publication follows HPC into the cloud. This is HPC Wire Soundbite for April 16th, 2010, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research, joined as usual by my co-host, Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning, Addison.
Michael, this is an interesting week for us. First of all, you wrote an outstanding piece on a Cray operating system that's ISV-friendly, but before we get to that, it turns out HPC Wire has a new sister publication that debuted this week. Tell us about HPC in the cloud, and I think you've got a new guest to introduce to our listeners.
Yeah, I guess we're sort of making our own news this week. Like you said, we've got our new publication we launched, HPC in the Cloud, and we're fortunate to have the managing editor along with us today, Nicole Hemsoth, joining us from Columbus, Ohio. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning.
So as anyone who's been following the space over the last couple of years, obviously cloud computing for HPC has been in the news. It's garnered a lot of interest from users, vendors. Nicole, what have you been seeing so far?
Well, Michael, one of the first things I've been seeing is a great degree of contention about what cloud means, how viable it is, how applicable it is to enterprises of all sizes, and of course to small and mid-sized businesses. So since we are HPC focused, we are of course dealing with large-scale data-intensive processes and organizations. So our concerns aren't necessarily the same as they would be for say a small to mid-sized company who's considering kind of moving some of their operations out into the cloud. The concerns here are, of course, security. That's the biggest one that we're seeing. So lots of companies are pleased with what it might offer, especially in terms of cost and resource savings. Even though there are a lot of upfront costs, a lot of them are interested in the idea, but there are just too many what-ifs floating around out there.
Nicole, you're taking on so many issues with cloud all at once. It's got to be overwhelming to even figure out what you're going to write about first. I mean, from an analyst chair, people come to us and ask, you know, what the size of the cloud market is. And I don't even know what to make of that question. Cloud is a market. What things do you want me to count? Can we even come up with a definition that we can all agree on about what technologies we're counting here? Are you at least getting people synthesizing their views on what cloud computing is and what things you're covering?
I am getting people synthesized, but they are all kind of falling into their own camps. So there's synthesis within these kind of micro communities. So there are people who are proponents, of course, of the private cloud who think that that is where the future is. There are people who think that the public cloud has the potential to revolutionize HPC and small and mid-sized businesses. So there are no hard and fast rules here. Everyone is sort of divided. I think everyone does agree on the fact that this can be enormously cost-saving, and that it will revolutionize computing in general. It's just going to take a long time. There are too many barriers, especially, again, in terms of governance, security, control. I don't think there are any questions about whether or not it would work. It's just sort of in its infancy right now, for HPC anyway.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I've been in the industry a while, even before I was a journalist in the industry, and it's funny, IT in general, it's all cutting-edge technology, but it's still a business. Like most businesses, you know, they have this rather conservative business model. So whenever you have to sort of make this change to a new way of doing it, there's always sort of a lot of, reticence upon people. And even though this is like, you know, cutting edge stuff, people don't want to all of a sudden change from HPC to grid or grid to cloud. It's a big change for them, and people are really conservative. So I think you're dead on, Nicole, in saying it's going to take a while. And it's not the technology that's holding it back. It's basically, you know, people's ideas of how they're running their business and how much momentum is already built into that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people I've talked to are worried about losing control over their data and their processes, and that's a very valid concern.
Yeah.
And that goes really hand in hand with security. Yesterday, I went to Purdue University. I ended up talking to a lot of people on their technology staff, from the CTO, Jerry McCartney, to some of the members who helped develop the Hub Zero project, which is related to the Nano Hub. And although the focus of my visit was very functional, I wanted to find out more about Hub Zero, I ended up talking about some of these large-scale issues about cloud adoption and what the problems are. And again, it all came back to this idea of, let's kind of step into the private cloud and see how that works for us before we even make the consideration to go larger. One thing that I am seeing, though, for organizations of that size, universities of that size, they are making use of the public cloud for, you know, this idea of the hybrid cloud is really becoming popular. And I think that's the first step towards wider adoption. People kind of saying, I'm comfortable with putting this out there in the public cloud, but this stuff, I don't want anybody having any control over it outside of this one division. So that's a first step to major, massive cloud adoption. Since research institutions are, of course, the cutting edge right now, it's going to branch out into smaller commercial enterprise. So,
yeah, Nicole, that's really consistent with what we've been seeing on the research side. You wrote this outstanding feature, public-private hybrid and enhanced cloud. We should mention, of course, this is all at hpcinthecloud.com if people haven't found the new publication yet, but that's where your feature article is now. But, you know, we looked at it from the standpoint on the research side of what it all means to ISVs, what are you actually going to run in the cloud? And we found that a lot of the ISVs are looking at it from that exact standpoint of, yes, a lot of end users are asking us for cloud. And yes, we're looking at license models that move us into cloud, but we don't see it as an immediate near-term revenue opportunity because people are starting off with these private cloud models or with in-house developed codes for the most part. So you see a lot of these private cloud implementations that don't require new licensing models for ISVs, at least not right now. It might start picking up in a couple of years. And this was the thrust of an article that we wrote looking at what the licensing models for ISVs are in the cloud.
Well, do you, Addison, I was wondering, do you think that there's going to sort of be this evolution? I mean, private clouds to me look more like what grid computing was or a little bit nearer to what it was supposed to be. Do you think people are in HPC are going to go to private clouds and then migrate to public or hybrid clouds? Do you think that's going to be the sort of evolution that HPC users are going to go through just because there's some familiarity with sort of these private grids?
Yeah, our chief research officer, Chris Willard, actually wrote a whole methodology on what he thinks some of the near-term business models are for cloud. And that kind of migration from private into public cloud, looking at things like cloud bursting as a model, is going to be one of the primary near-term opportunities. Eventually, you have the opportunity to do software as a service, HPC software as a service in the cloud, but that's where you get to Nicole's point about data control, data security, data migration, all being major issues in the cloud. Right, Nicole?
Absolutely. And again, at Purdue yesterday, this became accidentally the emphasis of all the conversations I had. There's this great desire to sort of branch out and embrace this concept, but the resistance is really large. And I look at it sort of as Internet adoption in reverse. So at the beginning of the Internet, you know, it was just research institutions, universities who were using the Internet for their own purposes. And eventually it branched out to all of us. And, you know, everybody on the receiving end after the universities kind of developed it further said, I'm not sure about this new technology. There are too many risks involved. You mean I'm actually going to give my credit card information to a machine and have it process it in this great vast space that I don't see or understand? So it's kind of in reverse now, where we have the large institutions saying, you know, we're a little bit worried about putting everything we have out there. I mean, what's going to happen to it? This has always been our domain. So it's sort of that same model, but in reverse, which is really interesting to me. So it's just baby steps right now. It's saying, what parts of the cloud can we use and adopt just for a resource, for resource uses, where you say, you know, we have these processes running that are eating up all of our bandwidth. Let's move these into the cloud, but protect our data and leave it in the private cloud until we're more comfortable with this as a whole.
Those are excellent insights in terms of the steps that it takes to move into cloud. You're right, Michael. This is similar to what we saw with grid adoption. A lot of cloud is just taking grid another step further in terms of what the interface is to how you access these things. I think the stress that you put on ISVs can't be underestimated, especially given some of the other challenges ISVs have in front of them with the movement to multi-core, all the different platforms they're trying to support, which is actually related, Michael, to the feature article you've written for this week's issue in HPC Wire about the new Cray offering and how that's designed to be ISV friendly.
Right, and that's sort of a 180 from what we're talking about, because Cray, of course, is a company that never talks about the cloud. They're associated with the highest end of supercomputing and supercomputers, even though they've got mid-range HPC as well now. But yeah, I mean, this week they had some pretty big news that was sort of quiet, and yet I think it's going to be big news for them. They released their next generation of their Linux OS for their XT line of supercomputers called the Cray Linux environment, and it's their third generation. And that just seems like a point release for us. But actually, the big news here is that they've made this ISV friendly. So whereas before, the XT supercomputers, basically people ran custom codes, the government ran their own codes or whoever, but you couldn't get ISV codes on there very easily because it wasn't like a Linux cluster. Linux x86 cluster didn't have the same interface. They've got their own proprietary interconnect in there, and the libraries were different. So what Cray decided to do, in fact, they decided this 2 years ago, and this is just coming to fruition now, is add a layer in there so it makes it look like this Cray Linux environment looks just like a regular Linux environment on any x86 cluster. And now basically, out of the box ISV codes from, the MathWorks, Simula, Ansys can work on a Cray XT Super, a petaflop system, basically with no changes. You set up the licensing and go.
Michael, do you think that that's going to allow or enable the ISVs to say that their codes or their applications are certified there? Or are they still going to want to go through a certification process regardless of how transparent Cray says this is?
Well, I'm not sure if they have to certify. I mean, basically, I talked to Barry Boulding at Cray this week. He's the vice president of their scalable systems division. And basically saying it's sort of transparent. The software basically runs like it does on any Linux cluster. Now, I know they have to talk to Cray to get the licensing straight. That's always the issue. You've got to, install the licensing features so that things will run. But I'm not sure you have to certify it because it's not different code. They're not recompiling the code anymore, which is what they had to do before if you wanted to get it to run on an XT Super. You had to recompile right.
And that was because the Cray Linux environment had certain modifications to reduce jitter at high processor counts, right?
Right. Well, they basically had their own libraries to talk to their C-Star interconnect, which is sort of their magic sauce that makes it a supercomputer. I mean, that's really the basis of it. So, yeah, I mean, they had to actually create this new product, give them a new CD and say, yeah, this one works on an XT, but the one you buy off the shelf doesn't. Well, now they don't have to do that anymore. They just have to, the thing they ship in the stores is the thing that's going to work on the Cray top-of-the-line stuff now. And it's interesting, Barry Boulding, when he was talking about this, and I didn't put this in the article, but it was a good point. He says, there's going to be two big announcements this year for Cray. One of them is the Baker system, the hardware that's coming out in Q3, their next generation XT system. And the other one is this new Cray Linux environment they're coming up with. And he was saying he's not sure which is going to be the bigger story in the long term, because he really feels like getting the ISVs on board to these, petascale type machines is really going to do a lot for Cray, their markets, their approach. you know, Baker's hardware, I mean, that's obviously it's going to be a big story, but you think this might end up being the bigger story of the year when they look back, you know, 5 years hence and say that's where we kind of turned a really important corner.
Well, I think Barry makes an excellent point. Baker is, it's Baker, it's Cray, it's a big supercomputer. That's the one that's going to hit. But the Cray Linux environment is the more subtle story that probably makes a more material difference to more people. And when you look at some of the things that Cray has gone through with its CX1 business unit, its new entry-level systems, its new mid-range systems, its partnerships with Dell, its partnerships with Microsoft, the new Cray Linux environment, all of these things are designed to make it easier for more people to get more things running on more Crays and ultimately help Cray increase its market share. So while Cray remains attached to the high-end supercomputing glory that they get with machines like Baker, it's nice to see that behind the scenes they're turning the crank on things that will make a difference experientially for more people to adopt Cray technology.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They're getting more things to run on more of their computers. That's their overarching strategy. That's exactly it. It'll be interesting to see, though, how the market plays out, because basically now they're sort of going head-to-head against, you know, commodity Linux clusters, and so they've got to have a better price-performance story somehow. Now, the version they put out this week, they're using a TCP/IP interface, which doesn't quite have the performance or has something close to the performance of an InfiniBand cluster. But next year, they're going to come out with an OFED layer that's going to be faster. They're going to have their Gemini interconnect underneath that. And, you know, Barry Boulding said basically at that point they'll be able to outrun, you know, a commodity Linux cluster. So now they can beat them on performance, or basically say, well, we've got a Linux cluster that runs ISV codes and we can outperform anything on the street that's, you know, you buy out there that's, you know, vanilla cluster. So that'll be an interesting story, and that'll blur the lines between, you know, what's the difference between a proprietary system and a commodity system. But it'll be an interesting thing to follow as far as what part of the market Cray is able to grab from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as with a lot of announcements, you know, we can talk about what we think, Michael, but then ultimately we come back around and we see what the market thinks.
Yep.
Starting next week, we got a lot of interesting conferences that we're going to be talking about a week from now. There's one of them's a high-performance Linux conference that's specific to Wall Street coming on Monday. Obviously, BioIT World is next week in Boston. Nicole, there's even one that's in your bailiwick, the Cloud Expo, that's also in New York on Tuesday. And I'll be at all three of those. And I'll be ready to talk about all of them next week.
That'll be excellent. I'm looking forward to that. And Nicole, thanks for joining us this morning. Best of luck. Obviously, we'll be talking a lot, and you'll be coming on the show on many appearances, and we'll be seeing you again.
Welcome, Nicole. How'd you enjoy the podcast?
The podcast was a new experience, Addison, but you guys are so smooth on the line that you make it go easily. So thank you for having me. Thank you to your listeners for checking out HPC in the Cloud.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.